You remember that sound? Yeah, you do. The 1990s. It was fun. Lots of fun music, good times. Bookended by pop bands. And right in the middle, we got a little grungy. So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? We know what Marky Mark ended up doing, but what about the rest of the Funky Bunch? Alanis Morissette had a pop career before she made it big with Jagged Little Pill. The KLF, an EDM band from England, got Tammy Wynette to sing on one of their tunes. All kinds of crazy stuff happened, and we're going to talk to you about it with interviews with some of the biggest stars of the 90s on Dope Nostalgia, the podcast. I'm Naomi Carmack, and I'm your host. Check us out on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, anywhere you get your podcasts. And look us up on the internet at dopenostalgia.com.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, your host of Get the Word. Today we have a special podcast episode. The word for today is nostalgia. But today's format is not the regular format. In fact, this is an interview with Naomi from the podcast Dope Nostalgia. She was nice enough to want to chat with me and have me on her podcast talking about Morrissey, which is an artist that some of you may have heard of from the UK, who was once in the band The Smiths back in the 80s and did a lot of his, most recognizable work in the 90s as a solo artist. And Naomi and I talked about Morrissey as well as nostalgia. Nostalgia was kind of the tie-in to Get the Word, and her podcast is about 90s nostalgia, 90s music, and she interviews such great artists all the time, and other podcasters, and just people to talk about nostalgia from the 90s. I highly recommend the podcast. She has a great rapport with everyone, and we had a great discussion. We really picked apart the word nostalgia, a bit of the history, but more of just what it means to us and what it means to me and what it means to have Morrissey as someone in my life who has really influenced me but also who has definitely kind of a controversial outlook on things. And some of his more recent comments, public statements and comments, have been very controversial and downright kind of just racist and nationalistic and kind of just not very compassionate towards other humans, as he at the same time really rallies for the rights of animals, which is something that I respect about his public stances and what he advocates for. So a very complicated figure, a person who whose music has influenced many, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who struggles with separating the artist from their music. And he's a perfect case of this, and I want to also mention that I'm releasing this on the U.S. holiday of Thanksgiving. I thought it would be a perfect day to release this on to kind of touch upon the fact that not only do we kind of write our own history with rose-tinted glasses, we also often don't take time to reflect on that. And this is the perfect day to do that. I also want to give recognition to the fact that I'm recording this on what was once the tribal lands of the Kiowa, the Kansa, and the Pawnee tribes. Those are the tribes that were once here before colonialization and the subjugation and forced removal of many different peoples from this country. So those are my stomping grounds now, as I'm settled in kind of western central Kansas. And I wanted to give thanks to the fact that, the colonialist goal of wiping out tribal culture has not been entirely successful. And all these years later, we do have a way to do tons of research and learn about these tribes and in respectful ways, reach out and see how you can help these people and at the same time learn about their cultures. So I wanted to throw that out there as well. Whatever you're doing today, I hope that you're just giving thanks and recognition to all the privileges that you have in this world, and maybe try to take some time to think about think about why you're able to kind of just enjoy a comfortable life. You know, who is contributing to that that you don't often think about? People who perhaps are not in the same conditions as you are, but who in one way or the other are contributing to your comfort, to your relaxation, to your happiness. I wanted to throw that out there today as well. And I hope you enjoyed this interview. It was a lot of fun. It was a great opportunity to meet somebody who I hope will be a part of my life going forward. I look forward to perhaps more interviews with her, talking about other artists, maybe do a more lighthearted episode was her idea in the future. And stick around, because after the interview, I'll just give an update about what's been going on with Get the Word and how you can support the podcast. So here is my interview about the word nostalgia, as well as about the artist Morrissey, with Naomi from the great podcast Dope Nostalgia. I've been listening to some of your interviews. You have had quite a draw of interview guests. Really impressive.
It's been very exciting who we've been able to get up on the show to chat. And it just keeps growing. So I love it.
That's fantastic. What was your motivation to launch the podcast?
Well, I already am on a podcast called L2L, Learning to Listen. And I've been doing that podcast for about 3 years now with a couple of good friends of mine. When we first started out, we were just doing like fun chat about our lives, about situational stuff. It was a podcast about nothing, like Seinfeld. I don't know. Yeah. And then yep. Now that we've been doing it for a while, for the last year, we review albums now.
Oh, cool.
We have guests on to present albums to us as well. So we do that. But anyway, so that was my first taste of podcasting. And then I said, I really love doing this. So if I were to focus on something, wouldn't it be cool to talk about all the music in the 90s that helped raise me, you mm-hmm. know, and just on also focus on people that nobody may have remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As the people who are the heavy hitters, like a bit of both.
I'm glad that you wanted to talk about Morrissey, because you said that you weren't very familiar with Morrissey, especially as an icon of the 90s, popular media.
Well, what I know about Morrissey is, yes, very limited. But I do know that he's no flash in the pan artist. He is probably quite legendary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know he has a legion of fans.
I was thinking about that. Like I've never spoken to a Brit who doesn't know who Morrissey is. Mm-hmm. You know, but I feel like I've definitely talked to Americans who were either like, who's that? Or I don't really know any of his music. Or like,
where are you from, Mike?
I grew up in upstate New York.
Okay.
So, and you're up in Canada, right?
That's right. Western Canada.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you in British Columbia or
Alberta?
Alberta. That's right. I knew that.
Yeah.
Morrissey was pretty important to me, like in my teenage years. But before that, I hadn't really heard of Morrissey either. So I was born in 88, and I've been reflecting on nostalgia all day today. But I was thinking like, he was definitely an icon of the 90s. I was doing some research. The only time he was nominated for a Grammy was in the 90s, I think, for his album Your Arsenal, which was 93. But I was obviously way too young for that, you know, that period of Morrissey. But it is what I started exploring once I got into Morrissey. Like his late 80s, early 90s stuff was like monumental to me mm-hmm. as a teenager.
What I find is when you're first listening to the artist, when you first discover them in general, if you're that interested in the music, most you will dig into the back catalog.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't really see people just start halfway through their career and ignore what got them there.
Definitely. Definitely. And you don't look much older if you're older at all than I am. So is that a lot of your 90s nostalgia too, kind of like reflecting back on music that came out even before you were listening to it? Is there that kind of layer to your nostalgia?
My nostalgia is primarily based on when I got to choose music for myself, at what age I got to do that.
Okay.
And that's where most of this nostalgia lies. I am 42 years old. So I was born in 1978. Oh, wow.
Well, you look, you definitely look young.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where it's kind of centered for me, because it wasn't until the late 80s until I was picking my own music, making my own choices that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. Okay.
Hence the Tiffany album on the wall. That was the first record that I chose for myself. But it's on the wall because she signed this one. She came to Edmonton and did a little show. And
that's great.
Yeah. Oh,
that's great. So have you been able to meet a lot of artists in person that you've been interviewing or before that?
Not in person for the interviews.
Yeah.
This whole Zoom world we live in now has been beneficial towards doing the interviews.
Yeah.
But I have met some of my favorite celebrities. Absolutely.
That's great.
When they've been on tour or throughout here, if I can swing it, I try.
I got to see Morrissey in Vermont. I think it was Burlington. And I met a few Suede heads outside of the show while we were waiting in line. I guess those are his diehard fans that follow him around. Yeah, the Suede heads. And I have to say, he was very uninterested in the whole performance. That seems to be kind of his MO, though. He's just like, let's get through this. But it was still pretty memorable.
I get the impression that he's very aloof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time. There's just like this mystery around him. And but I don't want to skip over anything. I actually did take a lot of notes for the interview. And I don't want to take over too if you had any questions for me.
I'll ask questions as I go, but you are the expert on this episode.
Okay. And we agreed this can be like a great kind of crossover, because I did some research on the word nostalgia itself. So I figured, to tie into my etymology podcast, we could talk about the word and what I found as well.
I would love that.
Do you want to start there then?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, basically, first of all, I want, as I welcome you to the show started, we're going to tell you, Mike Butler is here and he has his own podcast, and I'd like you to tell our listeners what that podcast is focused on, and then we'll go from there.
That's a great idea. So I've been doing it for just a few months now. It's a podcast on etymology called Get the Word. Mm-hmm. I haven't released an episode in the past few weeks. I've been on vacation, but I have a whole list of ideas to cover. And it's been individual words. Like, I think I did crow at some point, and it's given me an opportunity to, trace back the roots of words, but also just find little nuggets of interesting history around a word. I went into the episode about crow, I went into the Crow Indians, the Crow Native American tribe. Mm-hmm. And why they were called that, and how it was like a bastardization of an existing word, if I remember correctly. But then I was able to talk about the tribe a little bit, and like recent efforts within the tribe to try to keep the language alive. So it's been a great opportunity to just kind of do some deep dives on individual words and pluck out little interesting nuggets. And then I've been doing phrases too. So I did one on the phrase ships passing in the night. Mm-hmm. And it comes from a Henry Wadsworth Longfellow poem. And I was able to figure out that his family has a really long queer history that dates back since like the days of since the 1800s. And there's just like generations of openly queer folks within his family. And it's all documented, and there's like a house you can visit in New England. I wouldn't have known anything about that if I just wasn't curious about, where did that phrase come from? Ships passing in the night.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's an offshoot. This podcast is an offshoot of a podcast that I've been doing for like a year and a half called The English Sessions, which is a podcast for English learners. So, yeah, that's how it started. Like I started it on The English Sessions thinking I should make some content for more advanced students. But then I realized like this is really more for like advanced students and native English speakers. So I decided to make it its own podcast. But every episode still has an audio transcript. So if a learner is listening to it, they can still read along if they can't understand exactly what I'm saying.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That is amazing. You must have done really well in school with English.
I don't remember if I was like a star student in English. I think my the one class that I remember doing really well in and kind of being like the teacher's pet was earth science. But I think it's because the teacher and I connected. He was in like this gothic punk band back in the 80s. And I was I was in punk bands when I was a teenager. So like we connected over that.
Nice.
But yeah. Are you you're a musician yourself?
Yes.
Right?
I'm a singer. Yes.
And how long have you been playing for singing?
Well, I put my first music together actually at probably around the age of 10, 11, 12. It was 12 was the first time I was in a recording studio. Actually, the theme of Dope Nostalgia is my song that I recorded when I was 12. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. Maybe at the end of this episode, I'll let the whole thing play.
That's a great idea. I'd love to hear it.
I haven't done that. Yeah. Okay, sure. I'll do that. But I was in a hard rock band for over 10 to 12 years, more, maybe longer.
Wow.
Disbanded.
What's the name of the band?
Six String Loaded. Disbanded probably about 3 years ago. It was probably about a year before the pandemic.
Okay.
And we had an amazing time together. We did a lot of great songs, got to see some cool places and have good shows. It was quite the experience. So
that's fantastic.
And then I got into podcasting.
Yeah. Not as social. Well, in certain ways, I guess you're interviewing all sorts of people, but it's been hard, you know, over the internet to have that same kind of connection. Do you miss being on stage, that kind of just raw energy and, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I do. It's definitely missed, especially when we spent the last year and a half just in isolation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of things were missed. That's definitely one of them. But I'm happy now. I don't know how are things going for you now? Are you much of a social going out type of person?
No. And I don't know if you have friends who were saying this throughout the pandemic. I even said it myself, you know, hey, I'm an introvert, so this is perfect for me. But as time passed, I realized, you know, that the danger of being an introvert going through something like this is that you can just completely disappear. Mm-hmm. And I think there can be negative mental health effects of that.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. I completely disappeared. I sold my house in the middle of the pandemic in Arizona, which was like my last big attempt to be involved in like a arts and music scene. And that disappeared during the pandemic. So I just sold my house and I bought a house in the middle of nowhere in Kansas just because property is incredibly cheap here. And I've just been like focusing on fixing up this house, planning to sell it eventually.
That's amazing. So now you're a Midwest fellow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot more conservative than I expected. I shouldn't say a lot more because of course Kansas is a very Republican state, but I just didn't realize it was so deeply red. But it's been okay. What about Alberta? Politics there are kind of conservative too and kind of mixed, though I'm probably not as deeply conservative as
you're correct. I mean, a conservative government led our province for 40 years over like the 80s, 90s or some beyond, right? For a very brief time they went in a more democratic left route, but then the last election we had went back to conservative. And the current conservative government we have, I don't really want to state opinions too strongly, but they need to go. They need to go. The pandemic has not been handled well, from what I feel, by our provincial government. We've had outrageous numbers in COVID due to that. And and the cuts that they've made have really hurt Albertans. So that's just my opinion, and I'll end it there. But yes, it's a very conservative place.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Canada's conservative party is almost, I mean, compared to our conservative party, it's more like our Democratic Party or the, you know, our left party. Because I was researching Canadian politics. I was researching the hell out of Canadian politics because I was one of those Americans trying to move to Canada a year and a half back. But yes. I was impressed that it isn't as much of a two-party system up there, right? Because there is more of like a progressive, more like Bernie Sanders type party that has some influence, right? At least in like British Columbia.
Yeah, that's where the we have more than three parties, but there's three main parties. Four if you're considering Quebec, because Quebec has their own party as well. Right. And they're actually quite heavy in our parliament. There's quite a few seats that belong to them. It's great having the fact that there's more options, but it's bad because we never get a majority government when election time comes. You don't have, like, you have your official opposition to the leadership, but in order to make real change and real progress, you need to basically have a majority government. Our parliamentary system is like England, right? So, so there's room for change. And we also believe some out west here that the division of seats in the House of Commons isn't exactly in Western Canada's favor, because it's population based. So most of the population of Canada is around Ontario, Quebec, right, and closer to the border. So we don't have as much representation when we vote.
Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think of that factor.
And it's funny because, like, there's a lot of important things that help this country that come from Alberta, BC, Saskatchewan. A lot of the industry in Canada and a lot of the money and the equalization payments across the country come from this region. So that's been an issue of contention too. But yeah.
We should start our own politics podcast.
I've never
about
wanted
the American
to.
And Canadian. I know.
I usually steer clear of politics, but this has been a good moment to kind of speak about it freely. Yeah.
Well, do you want me to get into my research that I did on nostalgia?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I want to tell people about the word nostalgia, right?
Yeah. So let's pick it apart. I use a couple main sources, and then I usually kind of branch off from there. But one of the big ones is edamonline.com. And this is something that they said that I found on a couple other sites, that it comes from the 1700s. And often you can't trace a word specifically back to one person, but apparently you can with the word nostalgia. So let me read this. 1726, quote, this is the first definition of nostalgia: morbid longing to return to one's home or native country, severe homesickness considered as a disease, quotation and quotation marks. And they pick apart the word from modern Latin, coined in 1688. Okay. I thought it said 1726, but I don't know what that date is, but somewhere around there it says 1688 in a dissertation on the topic of the University of Basel, by scholar Johannes Hofer, who lived from 1669 to 1752, as a rendering of German, a German word that translates to homesickness. So, and I found that from other sources. So the original use of nostalgia seemed to be much more like what we use now as homesickness. And it seemed to be very much like existing in the medical realm for quite a while. And
in mental health,
Mental health, and then the physical effects
of homesickness on the body, because there was, I was reading something about, let me see if I still have that source pulled up. There was, okay, so that person that I mentioned, Johannes Hofer, had a frequent occurrence with Swiss mercenaries who were in the plains of the lowlands France and Italy, who were pining for their native mountain landscapes. It says, and I believe there was, you know, some war, as there was plenty of back then. And it was something, I read something about how he came to this conclusion after kind of noticing that this homesickness was kind of like a layer of how sick they were. Like he found this correlation between like how easily they would heal compared to how much, or how hard it was for them to heal compared to how much that they were going through mentally with homesickness. And that kind of makes sense. If you're longing for your home, you feel like you'll never get back. It's like having that sense of, you know, that will to live kind of being, you know, just drained from you. If you're just so far from your homeland, from your family, it makes sense that would be a layer of you know, your sickness, of how well you heal. So I thought that was really interesting.
What was interesting to me with this definition is I've never looked at that word as a negative connotation to it. Do you know what I mean? I've always thought more, it was, yes, there was the longing there, but I feel like it was a longing for a time that might've been better in your life, a time that influenced you the most, a time that you have fond memories of. Nostalgia is interesting, I think, too, in the fact that you ever think about the past and our senses as humans. It's amazing what touches off memories, like scents, smelling something.
Yeah, yeah.
That has been the most fascinating to me, because if you smelled like a perfume that you wore in like the late 80s, it just takes you right back there. Song lyrics can do that. It's just amazing how the human brain works. But I'd like to think that the word nostalgia now doesn't have such a negative connotation. And I don't really know if it would be as directed about mental health as it would have been then.
Well, depending on how much time you have, I'm free for hours, but I'd love to pick that apart, because it's something that I think about quite a bit. And you've seen what's happened in my country in recent years, in the past half a decade. There's this rising kind of sense of nationalism, and, you know, a certain demographic feeling like their world is being taken away from them as they see changes in society, and they're fighting back, you know, like there was an insurrection at the Capitol building in, you know, past January. And a lot of those people are trying to hold on to, in my opinion, like this nostalgia for, I wrote this in my notes. There's a song from Jello Biafra and Mojo Nixon called "Nostalgia for an Age That Never Existed," and I'm assuming that Jello wrote the song because it's very much about like punk rock back in the 80s in California, and it's very much directed to his experiences. But I think about that song a lot, because I think that idea is really strong, at least here in the United States. I'll say it, you know, of like boomer white men who grew up thinking that like there was nothing wrong ever. And it was like, everything was perfect. And maybe for them, it was.
For them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But also like it was being shaped as well by what was coming out in the media at the time. Like, you know, shows like Leave It to Beaver or whatever, it created such a false reality that I imagine is very much all wrapped up in their nostalgia now as they're aging and they're seeing their kind of like power being taken away from them. You know, no wonder they're fighting back, because if like what I'm sure for a lot of them, they feel like, what else do I have? God, mm-hmm. this country was so great. And now it's not for me or something like
for
that,
you know,
which is not even true in almost every way and every aspect of society and like medicine and like things are better now. But also for white men, like for everybody many ways, you know?
That's very interesting. Yeah. It's like these boomers that live their lives with their blinds, their eyes blinded to the poverty and the racism and everything else that other people suffered because everything was great for them. That's crazy. Yeah.
And now it's actually like a, you know, part of the national discourse and they don't like it. You know, they want to go back to like, I think of like the 80s and 90s. I grew up thinking that racism was over because I watched the Cosbys on TV because like black people on television were everywhere. And I didn't seem, at least in my clouded, you know, mind as a kid in a very white area growing up, I didn't think that there were racial issues going on.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that the Cosbys didn't have those episodes where they talked about racial tension or, you know, there was, or like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was, they had those episodes too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like I didn't grow up with diversity,
right?
Outside of a city that's still to this day very segregated, just being told, well, just don't go over there. And so like it wasn't even until my 20s when I even started like thinking about, you know, issues of how much privilege I have and race and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. And I don't want to blame the television. I don't want to blame like the images that I had growing up that looking back, like I have such a rose-tinted view of all of that. And now I find it, you know, I'm getting off track, but I was thinking about like the nostalgia around television, I feel is very different than nostalgia around music. And I listen to some of your episodes and like who you're interviewing, it is a very diverse group of people. And it's like so much more good, I feel it can come out of that kind of nostalgia around music than TV and movies.
Yeah. Well, I think with TV and movies, it's kind of like listening to the radio where everything is directly pointed at you and you have no control over what's being streamed into your house.
Yeah.
But with music, you had a few more options. And music was different. Cultures had different music that influenced them. It wasn't just the top 40.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about the music and the ability to talk to everybody is, yeah, I'm getting to talk to people who lived all kinds of lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not all kinds of perspectives. And it's been nice to have that shown. And there's a lot of things that we didn't know that these folks were going through.
Right.
And they're able to express them on the show 20, 30 years after they happened.
Yeah. Especially if they're artists that were just on MTV or something, all you saw were music videos. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a great way to really go into some of these people's minds when I guess all that we see is one very specific side.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So you get to get a little more knowledge about what was happening on the inside of things. I know this isn't exactly relating to what we were saying, but one of the biggest issues that I've learned about over the last year talking to people is how awful record companies were to their artists. Mm-hmm. You know, and they can do a lot of damage, or they did to a lot of people's careers or mental health, to be quite honest. But
I imagine.
That was really interesting to see and see how now we do things. It seems like quite differently in this age now that people can market themselves. But I know that's digressing from the whole point of nostalgia, but and the definition of it. But yeah, I don't look at nostalgia as a negative thing, especially during the last year and a half we had everything just kind of lined up the right way to do a show like this because we were stuck in quarantine.
Yeah.
And I felt myself yearning because we couldn't make any new memories. Not really.
Yeah.
You couldn't go out and do anything. So I felt myself yearning for a time that brought me happiness and joy and thought I was going to do this podcast anyways, regardless of when the pandemic came out, but it just hit right. It hit right. And I think it meant more to me to get reinvested into the artists that helped raise me on my musical tastes. So I don't see it as a negative thing to be nostalgic.
Well, that's good. I need to hear people say that to me. And like I could look back in my notes and bash nostalgia some more by looking into picking apart every the two parts of the word. But before I do that, because I think it'd be interesting if you didn't know, you probably do like the etymological root of each syllable, I guess, of the word.
No, I don't.
Okay, let me go over that real quick. It's somewhere in my notes. Okay, if we take apart the word, it's the first part of it, or no, the second part is from Greek algos, that is pain, grief, distress, and then combined with nostos, which is translated as homecoming, and it does reach all the way back to Proto-Indo-European roots, which are really hard to, I mean, once you trace a word back that far, it's hard to know exactly if it's translating correctly, but it does trace all the way back to Proto-Indo-European roots, these components of the word. So there is also a translation of a similar prefix, a neomai, that translates to reach some place, to escape, to return, to get home, or from the Proto-Indo-European translation, to return safely home. Old Norse, food for a journey. There's even a Sanskrit connection that translates to just approaches or joins. German, a German old word that's translates to recover. And then a Gothic word to heal, and Old English to recover. All of these words have similar etymological roots. Mm-hmm. And those are all different words that are now translate that we could, all those words in English are what we can translate those as. So there's always been this kind of sense that there's a negative aspect to it. But with that said, I'm right there with you because it's, podcasts like yours have gotten me through the pandemic, kind of reaching deep into the nostalgia. I also listen to a podcast called The Greatest Generation, which picks apart Star Trek, The Next Generation, episode by episode. Do you listen to any of those recap 90s podcasts?
I have listened to the one about the show The Office, and I've listened to the Sopranos one.
Cool.
Done by people who are on the show, both shows.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I've been noticing that a lot of people have been doing that lately. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like an episode by episode breakdown kind of thing, and their perspective on what was happening. That's very cool.
Another one I listened to is Are You Afraid of the Dark? Do you remember that show?
I remember the title, but I never watched it.
A very Canadian show. Mm-hmm. It was big on Nickelodeon here, but a lot of it was filmed up in Canada.
Yeah, I think it was on YTV here. That was our Nickelodeon.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm right there with you. I just feel like, just like every topic, period, there's so much nuance to it, so much gray area. I do think a lot of people are walking around with these rose-tinted glasses of their past, thinking life was better back then. I think there's a lot of danger to doing that, like the good old days. It's not.
It almost prevents you from... This is where I think there's a danger. If you're letting it prevent you from making a future or making new memories, or if you're too embraced and living in it too strongly.
Hmm. Or if you have a political candidate whose slogan is "Make America Great Again."
Very dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's why I've been so negative and nostalgic, because of what we were talking about with those white male boomers.
And I get it completely. And that's the thing too, nostalgia for different things. Nostalgia politically sounds dangerous. Nostalgia for music, not so much.
Because there was some great music in the 90s, right?
Yeah. And, but maybe it's holding me back from listening to new music, because I've always wondered why, if it just hit me at the age of 30 where I didn't want to listen to what was new anymore and I was just kind of stuck in what I love already. But I've become one of those people that the new stuff on the radio, I'm like, this is garbage. When I was your age, music was good. You know, yeah. That's kind of who I've become. But there's exceptions to that rule. There's people who put out music now that I still like.
I was thinking about that recently, too. Like, I agree with you. And I don't know if it's just because I'm only 33, but I'm reaching that age where I'm like, you know, I feel like an old man, like music is on the radio is crap now. But what you were mentioning earlier, the landscape is completely different now. Mm-hmm. And there is tons and tons and tons of great music coming out now, but it's not on the radio, right? And a lot of those people who are listening to that kind of music gave the middle finger to the radio a decade ago or more. Yeah. And so who's left? Who's left to listen to the radio? Like, before, it used to be like everybody was consuming music that way. So let's appeal to all sorts of different people. But who is radio appealing to now is what and who's left over, you know? And
that's a very good question, because terrestrial radio is not popular with teenagers. A lot of people don't even own radios in their houses anymore. Those who listen to a subscription service like Sirius XM already have in mind what exactly they like.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I would use a subscription service like that to listen to, say, I want to listen to Octane because I wanted to get into some rock. Then I would be able to maybe hear something new that I would like. So I would be preferred to go down that route. And then if you're wondering the youth of the future and the ones making the big stars, where are they getting their music? I think they're getting it from YouTube a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause YouTube stars are huge. I don't know who any of them are, but yeah. Kids love YouTube stars. I don't know where else they would be learning about the new artists if they're not listening to the radio.
Yeah. The landscape's completely different. And then I imagine, like, I don't know too many people in commercial radio anymore. That was my background for a while, but I never worked at a commercial radio station. But I almost wonder if it's like reverse now. Instead of the radio being able to tell people what to listen to, they're desperately, you know, getting on YouTube and TikTok or whatever and trying to, like, oh, we got to keep up with all this other media now. Mm-hmm. To even just stay alive and make a profit.
True.
Yeah, it's wild. And then there's just like, viral. There are so many great bands with tons and tons and tons of talent. And the only reason that millions of people don't know about them is because maybe they have a really strong fan base, but there isn't just that one radio that everybody gathers around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It can be a very good thing. I would say too, because the radio is a sign, a representation of the old school where the record company ruled all.
Yeah. And you were just saying
earlier, they were the ones controlling what you listen to.
Yeah. How terrible that was for artists.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So this is technically we have more choice now more than ever. It's better, but then it gets so overwhelming because there's so much content.
Yeah.
That you don't know what to choose. And it also allows for a lot of lackluster content to be out there. You kind of have to sift through a lot of garbage to get to the gold. Yeah.
Which a lot of people don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I guess it's always been like that, that like those are the kind of people who want to just be told what to listen to, I guess. And maybe that's that radio will always exist because of that, like some sort of just like, here it is. Here's what is popular. And I say so.
You will like this.
Yeah. There'll always be people who just want that.
But judging by the fact that the artist we're going to talk about today, I don't think he's much of a radio character, is he? Now, he's popular, very, very huge fan base, but I don't think of him as like mainstream.
I would go as far as to say that he is an icon in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And he has had chart topping hits or like near the top of the chart. I might actually still have that window open. If not, I can pull that up really quickly, but
yeah.
And you know, he was nominated for a Grammy, but
what I basically know about Morrissey is very, very limited. I know that he was the lead singer of a band called The Smiths. We're big in the 80s. I know basically his reputation precedes him as being, like I mentioned earlier, aloof. Doesn't seem like the friendliest person.
No.
I don't know much about his actual music itself because I've never really listened to it. I mean, I've heard it in passing. I've heard it when other people have had it on, but I've never actually invested my ears into listening to his music because it never appealed to me that much. I don't know, but I'm very fascinated about what you're going to tell me about him, especially in the 90s, because I don't know what he was up to. Well, I think we probably have some listeners that are fans.
He started his solo career, I want to say 1988. Yes. And early solo work, 88 to 91. And right off the bat, those early albums that he released as a solo artist got a lot of attention. And, you know, he had the music videos and, I don't remember ever seeing Morrissey on MTV growing up. But it could have been, you know, like some of the videos that they would show at like 2 a.m. or something. I don't even remember if MTV signed off in the 90s. but I guess I was a bit too young to remember. But I just know that he was huge in the UK. And let me look at this section for awards. The Brit Awards. I'm not very familiar with, but I'm assuming that's not.
I've watched them. They were always aired on Much Music here in Canada. Much Music being somewhat similar to MTV. I knew Much Music operated on an 8-hour show a day with three rotations.
Hmm.
So when you were talking about MTV ever shutting off for the day, they might have done something similar. I don't know.
Do you know the GAFFA Awards, G-A-F-F-A?
I've heard the term, but I don't know what they are.
He's been nominated for that twice. And the NME Awards. Do you know that what that stands for?
New Music Express. I believe that's a magazine publication.
Okay. Because they love the hell out of Morrissey. I don't know where that's published, but... dating back to from 84 to the latest was 2006, he was given a bunch of awards by that magazine. You said it was a magazine. Best songwriter, best dressed, best haircut, best male singer, most
best
wonderful
haircut.
Okay, this one's interesting. Most wonderful human being. And he won that award several times.
What?
And what I want to get into today with Morris, The research that I was doing today, I want to highlight how much of a wonderful person he is, with a lot of his public statements that he's made. I don't know if we're ready for that yet, or if you want more Morrissey background.
Let's go into the background, and then we can get to that point. Just so that people have a little more information on him.
Okay. So he is still a recording artist. And My favorite album of his was late 80s, Bona Drag, which I don't think was a studio album. I think it's kind of, it was more like a compilation album or like unreleased song album. I can't quite remember. Mm-hmm. But that was the album that had a huge impact on me. And he writes a lot about just being depressed and moody, and his lyrics are often very kind of like cryptic and I guess more poetic than, I mean, if you consider him a poet, I think a lot of people would say, you know, he's a hack poet. I think there's a lot of division within, like, the people who, I guess, were around his music growing up a lot, or still is. Again, I don't know. I'm assuming it's pretty different in the UK, and people probably have stronger opinions about Morrissey there. Mm-hmm. But he seems to be a very divisive figure in his politics and opinions, but also just with his music. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll sing about, you know, how much he wants to cry and all these, like, these different lyrics. And so there are going to be the people who say, oh, he's a, you know, he's a queer or a fag or whatever, you know, and his sexuality has also been a mystery very much too, is his public persona. And I think he enjoys that. He enjoys, like, not really telling the press about his, if he even has a sexual life. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things about him that drew me to him and was definitely one of the influences on me coming out finally as a queer person myself, is that even though I don't think he's ever publicly stated that, like, you just listen to his lyrics and he seems to have this confidence in talking about more delicate things that would end up getting him labeled as, you know, a queer or whatever, or talking about crying or being emotional. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, he said, fuck this. I don't want to, I don't care what people think about my lyrics. And he still very publicly states that all the time. And he's very, like, anti-press and, you know, anti-media. Mm-hmm. And then also he was a big influence on me as a vegetarian, and I've been meat free most of my adult life. And one of the few things that people know about Morrissey, if they're not even familiar with his music, is that he was a strong animal rights advocate with his song Meat is Murder. It's probably one of his most famous songs, along with How Soon Is Now, which was, if I remember correctly, the How Soon Is Now music was the background music for the MTV news show. And that was the Smiths. Both of those songs were the Smiths, but Meat is Murder and How Soon Is Now. I am the sun and the air of a shyness that is criminally vulgar. You would know that song if you heard it, for
it's
sure.
It's going to be one of those where you hear it and you go, oh, yeah.
It is the song that everybody knows. But that was the Smiths, so that was before his solo work. But you know, Meat is Murder, and even going to his concert for that song, like, typically you want to have a good time at a concert, right? And Morrissey is like, I don't fucking care if you have a good time. And so he, during that song, and it's a long song, and it's all about how he thinks, you know, a lot, there are, like, these atrocities going on within factory farms, and how we treat animals and how we consume animals as, like, as just like any other assembly line kind of product. And so for the entire song, they pulled down a projector and he just projected images of animals being slaughtered at slaughterhouses. And I feel like these are the kind of images that people need to see. We don't have to go into my politics, but there are a lot of reasons why he was such an important figure to me growing up. And then something about just the very unique sound that he has and the way he shapes his songs, really spoke to me. And if you were to label it as anything, I guess back in the 80s, the Smiths were like doing this kind of post-punk. It wasn't really new wave. It was something that they were shaping themselves that came out of those days of punk rock in the late 70s, early 80s. And then his 90s stuff and his stuff now, especially his stuff now, I guess you can just kind of label it as like generic rock.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how I would label his newer stuff. He has a very unique way of singing, and that's why I can't really label it. It's not operatic, but he almost sings very like he reaches down deep and he can really project his voice. And my parents just think he's nasally. I remember trying to, for my 21st birthday, we drove all the way to Las Vegas. They thought I would love going to Vegas. And I was like, oh, well, we get to listen to what I want to listen to in the car then. And I remember my dad having to turn it off. He's like, oh, you're so whiny and nasally. So, not for everybody, but that is how I would describe Morrissey, I guess.
Do you think he's stronger as a music writer or as a lyricist?
That's a good question, because I honestly don't know how much help he has actually shaping his songs, writing the, you know, the framework of the songs. I used to think that he was a poetic genius, and now I almost cringe listening back to some of his music and listening to his newer music. It almost seems like he's given up on, I don't know, trying to, I think he used to be able to, you know, reach somewhere deep inside himself and pluck out these pithy kind of, you know, like little, almost like lines of poetry. And it, even back then, I'm sure it seemed very pretentious to a lot of people, but now it just doesn't seem like he's trying that hard, and he's almost trying harder now to just offend.
Ooh.
And it's kind of ugly sometimes in some of his newer music.
I wish that, you know, I fully support people being creative late into their careers. I think it's a wonderful, beautiful thing to, that if you can still be writing and performing, please do. But sometimes I'm just like, oh, but the music you're coming up with now, it's just,
can you
just stop? Yeah. Might be one of those cases, but in his mind, he might think that this is the most brilliant work he's ever done. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah. And all the power to him then, I guess, because still tons and tons of people are listening. But he's alienated a lot of people recently. Are we ready to get more into his?
Let's do this.
Well,
this will be great.
Before I do, I want to say that I was afraid that the research that I was going to do today was going to kind of put me off of him entirely for a while. Because I know that he's been taking some really strong stances, like anti-Islamic stances and very like nationalistic politics stances. Yeah, I'll read you some quotes.
Whoa.
And I've been trying to just, I thought that this was something that we could talk about too, that would be really interesting, is separating the artist from the music. And I'm sure you've had to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because some people are monsters. I'm not saying that Morrissey's a monster, but you can write beautiful music or incredible music with a lot of talent, but still be a really shitty person.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it has been with some people, it is a battle to listen to their music again in the same way. And it's to separate the human from the art can be quite difficult. But sometimes the songs are so impactful that you're just like, I can't let the song go though.
Yeah. I listened to the Boner Drag album a couple of weeks ago, cranking it all the way. My partner, she was so patient with me. She just let me. She's like, okay, I get into these moods, I guess, where all I want to listen to is Morrissey. And I'll just crank his favorite albums or my favorite albums of his, and just sing as like another thing that I enjoy about his music is that his register is very close to mine. And I can really sing exactly what he's singing. And it feels good coming out of me.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, it's a weird feeling being so conflicted with the artist himself now. Mm-hmm. But let me look at my notes about what I wrote down about him. Okay, so I have, how much time do you have, by the way? Just
I think we can probably go, I'm looking at about 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Let's do it.
So I want to read a few things from this article that I found from a website called distractify.com. And it was an article about Morrissey and all this controversy around him. Have you heard of a political group called For Britain? That's just what it's called, For Britain.
No, I have not.
Okay, so this is a little bit about it. So as politics in Britain grew even more divisive with Brexit, Morrissey spoke up. He wasn't just pro-Brexit, but he was pro-For Britain, which is a far-right satellite party led by somebody named Anne-Marie Waters. Mm-hmm. In 2019, Morrissey wore a For Britain pin on his appearance on The Tonight Show, further cementing his political stance. Not only is For Britain extremely Islamophobic, but they are staunchly anti-immigration and anti-Black Lives Matter. Quote, while Morrissey's strong support for Britain is just one nail in the coffin, it's basically equivalent to being a diehard Trump supporter. This is somebody's opinion, I guess. I don't even know who they're quoting here. I should have written that down. Mm-hmm. But I can send you all these show notes, too, if you want. And I'll have them up on the Get the Word page once I publish it. Okay, so equivalent to being a diehard Trump supporter, even though he's come out and he has some quotes, public statements saying that he's very anti-Trump. He thinks Trump's a buffoon and dangerous person. So
weird that he would say that, yet his beliefs seem to fall in line with that ideal.
Well, it highlights the nuances of, you know, political issues around.
Maybe he likes the ideas, but he doesn't like Trump as the figurehead of them.
It's astonishing to me that anyone outside of the United States, even within the United States, thinks that Trump is great. But like, I feel like you can have these nationalistic right-wing politics anywhere else in the world and still be like, oh, that guy's such an idiot. Because he, I don't know. Like, I think that's how far detached from reality my country's politics are.
Mm-hmm.
So he's definitely taken these right-wing stances. Let me finish this quote. It's basically equivalent to being a diehard Trump supporter. So naturally, it's not too surprising that he's made other spotty remarks throughout the years, like positing, quote, so this is now a quote from Morrissey, everyone ultimately prefers their own race, unquote, as well as railing against the Me Too movement. And that was something I read today that makes me want to just like be like, can I really listen to Morrissey anymore? Because even if I'm just listening to Morrissey on Spotify or whatever, he's still getting my penny every mm-hmm. time I listen. Or, you know, like
you're having a dilemma whether or not you want to support him financially in any way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
And that's how streaming music works now, right? They get their percentages. So anyway.
Wow. I didn't care for him before.
I know. And so I've described to you my internal conflict around all this. Have you ever felt this way about any artists?
Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hard one. Oh my God, because his music is so good.
I've always wanted to believe he was innocent, but sometimes it's really, it's gray. It's so gray to know how many people were legitimate or just trying to exploit him for money.
Yeah.
He didn't leave himself in a good place to look good or innocent in any way. But then there's a part of me that also feel bad for him because he went through the body dysmorphia and all these things because of how he was treated by his father.
Yeah.
But he would have probably been quite a different human being if he hadn't been abused the way he had. But I mean, I don't know. I'm now at the point that I can separate whatever Michael Jackson is as a person from his songs, because his songs are just too good. Like his artistry was just above and beyond. And now I'm okay with just being able to listen to the tunes and not worry about who he may have been.
Yeah.
You know,
well, with Michael Jackson, there is that element of the cycle of abuse. Mm-hmm. And what he went through. I mean, he seemed like a very broken person.
Yeah.
And I guess if he did what, you know, he was accused of doing, there's no excuse for that.
No, none.
But I don't know. There is that element, whereas Morrissey he's probably never taken back anything he's ever said. He's the most like pompous, arrogant person, and that makes him easy to hate.
Yeah.
You know, you know what I mean?
Wow.
But
is there anything that Morrissey's known for doing in a positive light for his career or for humanity, or has everything always been so much of a arrogant negative? I guess to him it's positive because he thinks his right-wing extremism is a good thing in his eyes, but
and I mean he's endorsed animal rights groups and
the animal things
and let me look at this section of his profile, the animal rights advocacy. But he has intentionally kind of stepped away from the limelight and has always been a very private person. So I don't think that he's really put a lot of effort into too many causes, I guess. Mm-hmm. But he was definitely an important person for me to in my life to focus on animal rights issues. But let's see, the animal rights advocacy, he's a supporter of PETA, and PETA is really controversial. I'm not necessarily a huge PETA supporter myself, but
it's not what they stand for. It's how they go about doing things, right?
Yeah. Sometimes. And I've found some information on their website that I feel is very biased, very one-sided. But anyway, so, I'm reading through this, like, yeah, I don't think he's okay. He's made like a lot of public statements, you know, about against seal hunting. Okay, maybe you'd find this interesting because it's about Canada. In 2006, Morrissey refused to include Canada in his world tour that year and supported a boycott of Canadian goods in protest against the country's annual seal hunt, which he described as a barbaric and cruel slaughter. And I'm reading the rest of the paragraph. Nowhere does it mention, you know, the First Nations take on those things and like cultural ways of looking at it that he seems very blind to.
The seal hunt isn't something that I've looked into much because it's just the whole idea of clubbing a baby seal just kills me inside. I hate it. I don't understand it, but that being said, I don't understand it because I've never looked into it. Ah, yeah. I mean, to boycott the whole country because of that.
He takes those extremes. And then there is that element that most of that's happening is within indigenous, what's the word I'm looking for? Like they've been doing it for a long time. It's part of their culture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's where we need somebody who's indigenous on the show to discuss.
Yeah. So he seems blind to, in my opinion, his stances seem very typical of a white man of privilege, of massive amounts of privilege. And so, yeah, baby seal clubbing is terrible, but to boycott an entire, like these diehard fans of his up in Canada, they just had to, like, they didn't get to see Morrissey because of that issue.
Yeah.
Like even the people who are very like animal rights advocate kind of folks in Canada were just given the middle finger by Morrissey. It's like, what the hell?
You know? I think there's a lot of country who have their issues. Well, many, almost probably every country has negative things that happen, you know, like, yeah. Or things that you, people may not agree with politically or morally. I'm sure that happens all throughout the world, but then you wouldn't have a world tour if you had to boycott every country for what practices exactly. you don't agree with.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I know we don't have just endless amounts of time, but I did want to get to the point that you made also with Michael Jackson, that the media is spinning the way that we see people in the public eye.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, it was devastating for somebody like Michael Jackson. And to give Morrissey his, he's always saying that the media is doing that about him. And the what I read to you was from an article where they were pretty much saying that he's a Trump supporter, despite the fact that, or he's like the kind of person who would be a Trump supporter, despite the fact that he seems to be more of a complicated figure than that.
Yeah.
But
because it seems like his stances don't necessarily coincide. Like he has, I think he seems quite unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I wanted to read a couple direct quotes about him, or okay. I mean, from what he said. And so about being called racist, he says, when someone calls you racist, what they are saying is, you actually have a point. I don't know how to answer it. So perhaps if I distract you by calling you a bigot, we'll forget how enlightened your comment was.
Ooh.
Right. Exactly. So that's terrible. And so, like he's saying, oh, the media is making me out to a monster. But if these are real quotes, I guess I wasn't there to know if he actually said this, but this
is coming right out of your mouth.
This is
Morrissey.
This is from a news source in the UK, and I'll link to it in the show notes. So like if somebody wants to fact check some of these quotes, but on Theresa May and Islam, he says, let's see. Oh, no. Okay. So he has strong opinions on halal meat in the UK. Mm-hmm. And he says, if you have any concern for animal welfare, for example, you cannot possibly vote for either Conservatives or Labour because both parties support halal slaughter, which, as we know, is evil. Furthermore, halal slaughter requires certification that only can be given by supporters of ISIS. And yet in England, we have halal meat served in hospitals and schools. So
halal practice, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the same way that Jewish meats are prepared?
I don't know if it's the same.
Is it strictly Islamic preparation? I don't know. I'm actually not sure.
Because with the Jewish kosher thing, it's blessed by a rabbi or something.
Yeah, okay.
And halal meat is prepared as prescribed by Muslim law.
Mm-hmm.
So again, like I think I would have to fact check Morrissey, and his statements are just always to the extreme. I guess when there was a mass shooting, or I don't remember exactly what it was in Norway back in 2011, mm-hmm. he made a statement that is as follows, quote, "That is nothing compared to what happens in McDonald's and Kentucky Fried shit every day," is how he phrased it. So he has like these strong stances, like why give compassion to other humans when because of what we do to animals? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's like these kind of ideas that I grew out of years ago. And so to put a button on this, I feel like I'm growing out of Morrissey, and yet he's still holding on to like trying to offend everybody that he possibly can.
He has a very similar stance on things with animals and PETA as Bryan Adams does.
Bryan Adams, the recording artist?
That's correct. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. When it comes to the treatment of animals and such, because there were some things that you quoted and things I read here that very much in line with how Bryan Adams believes as well. But
I feel like
as humans, I feel like they're very different.
I imagine. Yeah. It's hard to compare anybody to Morrissey. That's for sure. I'll send you all these notes right now before I forget. This is from a list of 35 controversial quotes.
Oh my God.
So I sent those.
He makes
to
my
you
know. Stomach tense. This guy.
Yeah. Well, I imagine well, after this, then next? you'll never be a fan of the Smiths or Morrissey after this, I'm sure. Well,
I mean, the genre is based on punk rock roots, right? Of yeah. the music. If we talk about the music again, yeah. I've never been a big follower of punk rock music myself, but it is a genre I respect and it's very important to music in general.
Yeah.
And obviously it's very important to you because you played in punk music bands. And
yeah.
Yeah. So when we talk about him to the end of this, as a musician, what were some of the best works you think he did in the era of the 90s? And maybe we can play some clips.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Right. Because you've actually paid for like the ASCAP BMI kind of music rights.
We have an organization in Canada called, which is SOCAN. SOCAN is the same idea as ASCAP BMI. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if anybody's listening to this interview and get the word, then you'll have to go over and listen to the dope nostalgia version for sure.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to anchor.fm/get-the-word, where you can sign up for bonus content. There's also a Patreon page. patreon.com/theenglishsessions. I know that this was a different episode and there was no transcript. And I know for any of my listeners who are English learners, as I've said before, this podcast, Get the Word, did branch out from my other podcast, The English Sessions, which was created for English learners. And that's part of the reason why I always add transcripts, audio transcripts to the normal episodes. So there is no audio transcript for this episode. But if you want to access exclusive audio transcripts of other Get the Word episodes, as well as The English Sessions episodes, go to patreon.com/theenglishsessions. I really appreciate your help. If you want to help without having to spend any money, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review for this podcast and give it 5 stars. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, see if you can do something similar in your podcast player. Maybe make sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review and 5 stars if you can. It's very helpful. Also, make sure to write in with your suggestions. You can go to the website, EnglishSessionsWithMike.com, where you can leave a message for the podcast. You can record your voice and talk about what you want to hear on the podcast. And you can also reach out at GetTheWordPodcast@gmail.com. Give me your word suggestions. Thanks again, everyone. Make sure to follow us on all the social media websites, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. I'm sure I'm forgetting some. Thanks again. We'll be talking to you soon. This is Mike signing off. Hello, everyone. Mike here. I want to pause for a moment to talk about how you can help the English Sessions to continue. If you'd like to support the English Sessions, then please go to anchor.fm/theenglishsessions. There, you can click on the support button and make a monthly contribution to the English Sessions to keep this podcast going. You can support the English Sessions for less than $1. Every bit helps. Also, remember, go to www.englishsessionswithmike.com if you are interested in private lessons with me, Mike. Thank you all for supporting this podcast.